Thank you. So yeah, I would like to discuss that that thing here, those objects, those five bearing operators, and what we can do with it. It will be mostly a summary of that paper that we wrote with Ian Kim here and Brian Willett, who is in Santa Barbara. It's a short paper by the standard of the field these days, so 170 pages or something. And I will, well, most of what I will discuss will be in the paper. Some of it will be hopefully in some other paper to appear one day. So what is the setup? The setup is three-dimensional n equal to supersymmetric theories, and we'll consider Lagrangian theories. So Lagrangian theories, gauge theories, so meaning, well, I can write a Lagrangian. All I need to do is pick a gauge group, G, and so I have a vector multiplet and some representation of the gauge group, and I have some chiral multiplets. And with a few additional data, so in 3D, we have the once we have the vector multiplets, we write a kinetic term for it, which is the supersymmetric Leibniz term, with 3D n equal to supersymmetry, everything will be with it. So four supercharges in three dimensions. One nice thing we can do in 3D to specify the gauge theory fully, so we should specify potentially some Chern-Simon levels. So we could have various Chern-Simon terms for the vector multiplet with supersymmetry. So you would get the usual Chern-Simon action, something like ADA minus 2i over 2a cubed. And then there can be a term which involves one real scalar in the vector multiplet and some gauginos. And the level here is quantized by gauge invariance. And in this talk, we'll take the gauge group to be compact, of course, and either simply connected or UN or product thereof. We also keep track of global symmetries, which will be important. So in general, I will have various global symmetries. I could have some rather large global symmetry group. Typically, we'll just keep track of the Cartan, so I will write U1 alpha for the maximal torus of the global symmetry group, and we keep track of it also by coupling then all the conserved current to background vector multiplets. So we introduce various parameters for that. Then, in that kind of setup, there was a lot of activity on it for 10 years now. So exactly 10 years, almost 10 years ago, so Anton Kapustin, Brian Willett, and Itamar Yakov, Kapustin, Willett, Yakov, in 2009, took this kind of theories and put them, so you can consider in flat space, of course, but then they decided to put them on a tree sphere. And first, you can just consider the round metric on the tree sphere. So if you had a conformal field theory, then you could certainly consider just virus scaling of the theory, but you can also consider Yang-Mills theories and define them on the tree sphere by some specific couplings that preserve, in that case, the four supercharges in flat space, but now with some deform CZ algebra that on the tree sphere. And yeah, by the way, one reason, so I mentioned CFTs, and I won't discuss that much as CFTs in 3D, but one reason why we like all these kind of setups and exact results in 3D gauge theories is not so much because we like gauge theories in 3D, but because they are always in that, well, we will, yeah, they are essentially well, always here free in the UV, and then there's some nice UV fixed point, and we flow from them, and we can reach a lot of interesting SCFTs, including some that you can use in ADS-CFT and so on. So those gentlemen, when they consider this kind of theories on S3, they wrote an explicit expression for the path integral on the tree sphere. And it went like this, schematically. So the claim is that the full path integral for all these vector multiplets and chiral multiplets here on the tree sphere with the round metric can be written as this simple matrix integral where no sigma is it started its life as a scalar field in three dimensions, but now it will just be some constant vf of sigma actually in the Lie algebra. So sigma it's Lie algebra valued, but now we'll consider here the sigma to be vfs that we diagonalize, so sigma will be valued in H, the Cartan subalgebra of the gauge group. And you're doing this integral over the Cartan Lie algebra with some weight, which is just the classical action, evaluated on sigma constant. So sigma equal constant. And we'll take the gauge field to be flat, but on the tree sphere, that means that the gauge field itself is trivial. And so you just take the action, you put the gauge field to zero, you take sigma to constant, and there are just a few pieces that remain. In the Young-Mills action in particular, there is just a piece here, which is just essentially e to the minus pi I sigma squared. From the second term here, just because on this background, you also need to put d equal I, e equal the I times sigma. Okay. So this is known as this kind of thing as supersymmetric localization. Of course, it's a very old story that you can add a Q exact term to the action. And because of supersymmetry, you can really, in that case, well, the Q exact term is the Young-Mills action itself. And then the Saddlepoint approximation of the Young-Mills term becomes exact. And so we can just do the Saddle approximation. There is one loop contribution, the classical contribution, but that's actually the full answer in this case. And so the Saddle in that case is those things, sigma equal constant in the Cartan, flat connection. So let me write it as, yes, f mu nu equals zero. And for the chiral multiplet, we just put it all to zero. And then there is just one loop contribution here from all the chiral multiplets around the trivial, around their trivial values. And this guy, well, it has a lot of nice physics to it. For instance, you can consider just the so-called free energy on the tree sphere, which is the minus the log of z of S3. And you can just consider the real part. And this guy, for instance, is the so-called F term that appears in F theorem, and it's intrinsic quantities in any CFTs with or without supersymmetry. And with supersymmetry, we can compute this quantity exactly. So of course, a natural question then is, can we generalize this kind of game to more general tree manifold, more general topologies? If you had no matter fields at all, if you're just n equal to supersymmetric gauge theories, really you could have Young-Mills plus Chern-Simon, but the Young-Mills term will essentially decouple. You're left with a Chern-Simon theory with a bunch of gauginos that you can integrate out because there is a mass term from the Chern-Simon term. And in that case, you will just have in the infrared just pure Chern-Simon theory that we know how to put on various manifolds from the seminal work of Witten on knot theory. And well, one of the motivation for this kind of our work is to which extent we can have this story and understand such observables, not only for S3, but for many, well, the most general tree manifold we can, hopefully, for these gauge theories with supersymmetry. But now those are non-topological field theories with matter and so on. So one thing I should mention is that at first sight, this z of S3 will depend on your choice of metric on S3. So here we said that's the result for the tree sphere. You could consider any metric you want. The one question is, what does it depend on? The punchline is that actually this object only depends on so it's not fully topological, it does not depend only on just the topology of S3, but you need one piece of data, which is a so-called chance of transversely holomorphic foliation, THF. So it's just a foliation, which is transversely holomorphic, meaning that on S3, I have some foliation which corresponds to some one form eta that defines some leaves of the foliation. And I can always, so the transverse space, of course, I can always call it whatever. And naively, I would like to assign some holomorphic data to the transverse space. So some z-coordinates on the space transverse to the leaves of the foliation. So in general, I cannot do that consistently globally, but the data of a THF is precisely so that I can do that. There is such a structure. THF in three dimensions are an analog then of complex structure in four dimensions, so very natural analog. They naturally appear, for instance, when you consider those three manifolds as a boundary of a complex four manifold. And they're classified similarly to the way that two-dimensional surfaces, so four manifolds with complex structure, are classified. And in the particular case of S3, I will come back to the general case, the data of H actually comes with a modulus, which is again an analog of a complex structure modulus in complex geometry, which is typically called B in the physics literature, and it's also known as a squashing parameter. Because the way it was discovered is that people started looking at different metrics that look like elongated, squashed metrics on the sphere. But really, the data is not so much about the metric, but about this choice of foliation of the manifold. So I have these parameters, and then I could consider, well, people computed also almost 10 years ago, the variation for these observables, which is not these extra complex parameters that you can keep track of.
Sorry, I missed what you said. Did you say the metric gives you such a foliation? Did you say the metric gives you such a foliation?
No, the metric, what people did is they were looking first at thinking not in terms of this language, but in terms of the metric. They chose another metric, and then they tried to solve supersymmetry with that different metric. And those metrics look squashed. And then they naturally found what in the end amounts to finding a different foliation of the tree sphere.
Right.
But it was kind of a red herring. What is the metric? Because I could keep the round metric here and choose a different foliation compatible actually with this metric. And I will come back in a moment on how we parameterize this data. But we parameterize in a redundant way when we do explicit computation in that sort, but I will actually avoid using that formalism. So what about other three? So that's for the tree sphere, and I tell you that essentially there is one parameter family, continuous parameter. What about other three manifolds? So one nice family of examples that I like, and I will keep as an example, is a various quotient of the tree sphere. So for instance, we could consider length spaces. More generally, so other example, we could consider, let's say, S3 divided by quotiented by a discrete group. One particularly simple one, because it preserves actually also, it can preserve also four supercharges. In general, we only preserve two of the four supercharges in flat space. It's just to quotient by some subgroup of discrete subgroup of SU2. Generally, you could have quotient by a discrete subgroup of SU2 times SU2 here, but from the SO4 isometry of the sphere. But if I just choose those, there is a classical AD classification. The A series is just some length space, AP minus 1, LP P minus 1. The D series and so on, and one nice one, for instance, is E8. If you quotient by the corresponding E8 subgroup, which is called the particular group will be, for instance, this guy. That's called binary icosahedral group. Sorry. So this guy, it's a classic group which has order 120. It's an non-abelian group. The abelianization of that is trivial. And then what you get in that case, so this S3 mod. I will call it S3E8. That's just the Poincaré homology sphere. So the classic example, yes?
So this SU2 is kind of a chiral action on this
S3. So, the SU2 is just one of the SU2, let's say SU2 left when you speed SO4 here and SU2 left, SU2 right. And the supercharge are naturally on one of, let's say SU2 right, and then you quotient in a way that preserves the supercharge of flat space. I mean, that's one simple class of example where you preserve actually four supercharges. So that's one nice example, which becomes a rather non-trivial topology. And until recently, we didn't know how to compute supersymmetric theory on this guy. So how would I do? Naively, I could try to reproduce the work of Kapucin and friends. I should add a few names here. There is Amos, Machine Lee, Jafferis. Okay, I won't put any citation. That's a nice thing about doing a Blackboard talk. So if I wanted, let's say, to localize, I could actually do the same kind of trick. Naively, I would localize again on sigma equal constant and flat connection. But now, if you have if I have just an abelian gauge field, then it's fine. I will not have anything to worry about because in the Poincaré homology sphere, H1 is trivial. That's why it's called homology sphere. But on the other hand, the fundamental group is non-trivial. It is this binary acoustic group. So if I have a non-abelian gauge group, I should have to worry about various flat connections here that could appear for my connection. I would have something like that. And so in the flat connection, of course, are just maps from the fundamental group here of my Poincaré sphere to the gauge group. And in general, I would have some over those guys, even in Chern-Simon theories. This is a rather non-trivial problem that people have studied. So you would expect something like sum over flat connection here, and then maybe something similar, d sigma, z one loop, and so on. So that's the approach that you could take that people have taken to some extent in a few other cases, like ordinary length space, but it would get very fast, very complicated for even this example or more complicated topologies. The sum of topological sectors will kill you. So we would like to take a different approach, which is more similar in spirit to as we said, what Witten did, for instance, in 3D, in Chern-Simon theory, which is to use some kind of topological field theory argument. Here, it won't be fully topological in three dimension, but we will find some auxiliary topological field theory construction in two dimension. So before discussing that, let me then first explain which class of geometries, including this Poincaré homology sphere, on which I want to compute. So those is what we call the 3D FBPS geometry. FBPS because they consider, I should tell you maybe which half of the supersymmetry they preserve. But in four supercharge, you would have the individual notation Q alpha equal plus and minus in 3D. So it's a 3D Dirac spinus and Q tilde alpha. And so that's the four supercharge inflows in flat space and will preserve one Q minus and one Q tilde plus. And they will always have some kind of commutation relation. So in general, in flat space, I would have momentum here on the right-hand side, and here I will have some isometry. So I will need some isometry on my geometry here, and I will have then this kind of algebra with some isometry on the right-hand side. So a priori, to preserve any supersymmetry, the method we've been using, people have been using since 2011 from the work of Stan Seiberg, is some specify some background supergravity data associated to the three manifold. So you pick a metric on the three manifold, but you also need to pick some auxiliary gauge field, which correspond to the R symmetry. I forgot to mention at the very beginning, I said 3D n equal 2 gauge series, I was assuming also that I have an R symmetry, a U1 R symmetry. I preserve that. So that's very important in this whole business. So that's a U1 R gauge field. And then there are a bunch of auxiliary fields. And you want to choose value for the metric and those other fields so that you preserve some supercharges, meaning the gravity no variation. So this is a supergravity multiplet. Background supergravity, and you want that the gravity no variation vanishes for some particular generalized Killing spinors. And the number of supercharges is the number of those generalized Killing spinors that you can write down very explicitly. And so we preserve two, which have this kind of chiralities, meaning R charge minus one and plus one. Then you can classify which autopreserved supersymmetry. So first of all, if we had only one supercharges, then the as I said before, but all you need to preserve one supercharge in this language is a THF, so a transversely homomorphic foliation. If I have just one Q, let's say, of one chirality, R charge minus one, then I just need a THF. And they're classified, they're rather limited. Well, they have a lot of topology, but not the more general topology that mathematicians like. Topologically, they are either Seifert manifolds, I will come back to what is Seifert manifold, or torus bundle. And the torus bundles are just a thing when you take an interval times the torus, and then you close the interval into a circle by identifying the torus by a large diff. So you identify with some element of SL2Z. Now, if you want two supercharges, then there are two cases. Here I'm saying what are the topologies you can have, and then on some of those manifolds seen as topological manifold, I could have either a Seifert structure or a torus bundle structure, or sometimes both. There is an overlap. But if I want two supercharge, Q and Q bar here, Q tilde, then I need either to have a Seifert manifold with a Seifert structure. So I pick a Seifert structure as part of my data, or a continuous deformation of the Seifert structure, or a deformation of the latter. That's just to include a few other cases, like I tell you that for the squashed S3, B could be any complex parameter. So you could always pick, what we will do is consider the case when the B is actually aligned with a particular child of Seifert structure, then B will be rational, as I always review. But then you can start deforming B to be actually more general, and you will end on this. But that's actually only for the true sphere and a few quotients of it, and those are already fully understood. And then the other case that I won't discuss today is a particular background on S2 times S1, where the supersymmetry does not pick a Seifert structure. Instead, it picks some different THF, and that is the so-called superconformal index in 3D. So the partition function on this particular background. So there are many backgrounds on S2 times S1, but there is one in particular which compute superconformal index when you use in a super, it's called superconformal index for historical reason, but in a CFT, then you would actually have a trace over the various operators in your theories, something like that. And I won't discuss that case, but that's actually an isolated case. Then the generic VPS geometry are all this Seifert manifold, and that's what I would like to discuss today, explain how to compute on the more general Seifert manifold. Okay. So what we need here is, so in the background we'll consider, so we said that we needed to have one supercharge, we needed a foliation with a one form, but then if you take eta, if you have a Seifert structure, you also naturally have a Killing vector if you choose a metric compatible with a Seifert structure. When you have a Killing vector along the isometry, maybe I should define what is Seifert manifold. Did I define it? Not yet, I suppose. So let me first write here what is a Seifert manifold. So a Seifert tree manifold, Seifert M3. So it's just a tree manifold with a particular nowhere locally free U1 action. So you just have a locally free U1 action. So if it's competitive free, it's just a principal bundle. But in general, you might have special points in which you have some reduced. Like ZQ reduced action. Locally free U1 action. And then you can see that as a fibration when you have the U1 fiber, some S1 on the three manifold, and then the base, so the space of orbits of the U1 action, is a Riemann surface at genus G at potentially with orbifold points. So there will be n orbifold points. So here we have a Riemann surface orbifold, just meaning that, so I have a Riemann surface, closed, compact, orientable Riemann surface with a bunch of handles. But I also have this orbifold data here. I have n points, pi 1, pi 2, and so on. They could be anywhere, just distinct points. So they are marked points. And the local data is that there is an identification. So if I take some coordinate zi near the point pi I, where the origin is the point pi I, then there is a kind of orbifold identification. So a ramification 2 pi I over qi over zi. So the data of this orbifold is a data of a bunch of integers that we take positive, q1 to qn, and you have these ramification points. Then the Seifert manifold itself is determined by just the data of all your U1 fiber is behaves near those special orbifold points. Those are called the exceptional fibers. Typically we write it, the full data of a Seifert manifold as follows. I will explain those integers. So q1 pi 1, qn pn. Okay, so there is a data of D, which I will mostly suppress. It's a degree. So in the case of a principal bundle, that would just be the usual degree. Let's say you have it's just a degree of a circle bundle. G is just the genus of the base seen as a topological space. And then near each orbifold points, I have the local coordinates and the fiber coordinates, which are identified by e to the 2 pi I q I, zi, and the fiber then is rotated by 2 pi I p over q. And so for each q, you choose a p, which is mutually prime with q. And you rotate the fiber like this. And so that's like a question you would do, let's say, to define a length space. And of course, we take p and q mutually prime so that the actual three manifold is smooth. Examples. So of course, the simple example is when I don't have any orbifold points, and I just have a genus G Riemann surface, so I just have product space, S1 times sigma G, which will play an important role. Another cool example is if you have just, let's say, exceptional fibers, Q1, P1, and Q2, P2. So if Q1 and Q2 are mutually prime, then you actually have something that, so it's S1 over, so it's a three manifold, which is actually the three sphere over a two sphere, but with two orbifold points, Q1 and Q2. Okay, so I have the base here is a two sphere topologically, but now on the north pole and the south pole, I have these ZQ1 and ZQ2 orbifold points. And then the total space is topologically just a three sphere. But there is a particular Seifert structure which is different from the one on the round sphere, which will be the up vibration. Here, it's a variation on the up vibration where my squashing parameters B is such that B squared equal Q1 over Q2. So the way it works concretely is that the particular Seifert vibration or THF we choose is that you take the S3 seen as a vibration over the torus over an interval. So I have theta equals 0 from theta equal pi. That could be my coordinates here. Now I fiber the torus over it, some coordinate phi and chi. Okay, so the usual S3 scene with a torus that pinch on one end and the other circle pinch on the other end. And I could always pick a killing vector, which is of the form d phi plus b squared d chi. And that's the kind of background that people consider when they look at the squashed tree sphere. But now when b squared is rational, here, when this squashing parameter is rational, then of course the orbits of k close in the torus, and what you have is the orbits of k then are a torus knot inside S3, and the safer structure is associated with this torus knot, with q1 and q2 mutually prime. If q1 and q2 are not mutually prime, you can still look at this particular Seyfert manifold here with those special fibers, and then it's just a length space with higher p and q. It's with that, you can get all the possible Seyfert fabrication on the length space LPQ. And there is a similar relation to the squashing of the length space. Yeah. So yeah, those were all examples that we knew before, but of course now maybe I should write down my only non-trivial example, I mean the one I want to discuss in some detail. The third example would be, what if I take three exceptional fibers, 0, 0, and then I will choose just one particular example, 2 minus 1, 3, 1, and phi 1. Okay? And this is precisely the Poincaré homology sphere. That's one nice example. And in general, if you have more than two special fibers, so two special fibers are just length space, and those are known. But anything with more than two special fibers, 2 or 27 of them, those are more general manifolds that people didn't know how to compute before. This in particular is a Poincaré homology sphere with this safe fibration structure. Okay. So what's our general approach to then compute Z of M3 on any Seyfert manifold? So that's my, first I need some lemma, some small point, part 3, which is about the twisted superpotential. So what will be the general strategy? What I want to do is mimic what we can do, how we can understand this general Seyfert manifold as a surgery. So what you can do always in this business is, let's say, start with S1 times sigma g, the product space. And then you try to fiber the S1 non-trivially over sigma g. You can always do that by cutting a disk inside your Riemann surface. So you have a disk times S1, and then you glue back the disk times S1, so which is a solid torus, to itself with a large diff. And the large diff is determined by Q1 and by some integer q and p, mutually prime. So you will have, in general, some SL2Z element, which I write like minus QP TS. Okay? So my SL2Z matrix like this, and Q and P are the safer data here. And I do SL2Z transformation when I glue back, so that's then surgery. And by repeated operation like this, I can build a generic safer manifold. So we would like to do that in the field theory somehow. So first, then, we need to understand the field theory very well, just on the product space S1 times sigma g, and then we'll just be able to somehow fiber the S1 in this business. Okay, so we start from, let's say, R2 times S1, and then, of course, I could always compactify R2 to a Riemann surface. So in this setup, of course, I preserve all the supercharge in flat space. I'm just compactifying one direction on a circle. So if I forget the extra direction, then in terms of supersymmetry, it's the usual 4 supercharge non-chiral algebra n equal to 2 supersymmetry in 2 dimension. And then I can always consider this background preserve 2 supercharges, this q minus and q bar plus. This is the so-called A twist of Witten. I mean, it is 88. So it's just the particular twist of an equal to 2 supersymmetric algebra. I can always do that on any Riemann surface. So then I want to understand the low energy effective field theory, let's say on R2, but really on anything mag here. And we will use a lot the fact that, well, we then will go to the cohomology of those two supercharges. All the observables here will be only depends on Q cohomology element, not on the actual elements. So you can always throw out anything Q exact. And then up to Q exact term, the effective field theory will be, well, so you want to have a low energy effective field theory. So you reduce all the fields, but you keep all the KK modes here. So that would be the S1, E1 KK. So it's a 2D, it's a 2D field theory with an infinite number of fields. Yes?
Don't you worry that the supercharge squares the translation and not to zero?
Yes. So that's, well, yeah, the Qs here, they do Q plus. So they're nilpotent each. And they square to the isometry along the circle.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were being cubed in some of them.
Q. Oh, no, yeah. Well, I mean, the usual A twist will be the sum of the two. Well, I'm just keeping those two, Q minus and Q bar plus. And then by my algebra, Q minus and Q bar plus are nilpotent. And I will go to the Simulus cohomology of those two. But then the supercharge is also, yeah, here there is just the isometry, the momentum along the S1. Plus a real mass here. And so plus IM or something. And that's, in 2D language, I just say complex central charge. So I want the low energy effective field theory. Then, well, it's a long time dance, but what we will do in the end is actually try to integrate out everything we can. Part of the reason is that we will have various masses for all the Faber symmetry, so that all the fields are actually massive, all the chiral multiplet modes and so on. And then you can try to find a low energy effective field theory for just 2D vector multiplets with all the other guys integrated out. And what we will need is really to abelianize the theory. So there is a long story from the 80s about just without supersymmetry that Young-Mills theory are solvable in two dimension, especially from the work of Witten, of course, but also of Blow and Thompson. So the Blow and Thompson had a nice procedure to abelianize gauge theories in 2D, and then there is a lift to 2D times S1, similar to what I'm doing. So I won't discuss that much, but the point is that now we have a low energy effective field theory, which is for abelianized vector multiplet, so you can think of as being on the Coulomb branch of the 2D field theory. So the Coulomb branch parameter, the 2D Coulomb branch parameter are VEF for various compact scalar, which are of the form like this in terms of my 3D variables. So there is an imaginary part, which is the real scalar from 3D. And there is the real part here, which is the holonomy of the 3D gauge field along the circle, the extra circle. And the beta here is just the radius of my S1. And then by large gauge transformation here, because so e to the minus I a zero, let's say, would be the holonomy. 2 pi I. So there is a large gauge transformation u to u plus 1, let's say, for an abelian theory, and a similar large gauge transformation for any in the Cartan of any gauge group. Then all the dynamics of this low energy field theory on the Coulomb branch is captured by just a twisted superpotential. So that's just like the superpotential, but for those so-called, so those 2D vector multiplets are equivalently described as twisted chiral multiplets in two dimensions. And the low energy effective field theory up to Q exact term take the rough form T2x, the flux from the 2D gauge field times the first derivative with respect to these U parameters of the some potential, the twisted superpotential, and then there is some coupling to the fermions in the theory in terms of the second derivatives. And so everything is determined in terms of this effective twisted superpotential that you can compute. So you probably know, in a purely two-dimensional field theory, when you integrate out a chiral multiplet on the Coulomb branch, you would get some term like sigma log sigma by integrating out the chiral. And here we are doing the same, but integrating out all the KK towers. So what you get is a term which comes from classical, there is a first term that comes from a classical, the classical action in three dimension, the Chern-Simon terms, which is of the type U squared plus U, with K is a Chern-Simon level. So that's from the classical action. And then there is one loop contribution from integrating out all the chiral multiplets. So you sum over all the charges, all the weights of the chiral multiplet in various representations, and you get, you sum this kind of thing over all the KK modes, and you get just a dialogue, e to the 2 pi I u rho of u. To be the kind of thing you get. Here, rho would be a weight in whatever representation of my chiral multiplet. It acts on u in the carton of the algebra. Then the 2D vacua. Yes, I am. I'm just, for notation purpose, I will mostly suppress the background flavor. But yeah, it's important to also keep track of the flavor. So let's say if omega are my flavor parameters, my flavor charges, sorry, and I have various parameters nu. So nu is equal, it's the u for flavors, right? It's my background vector multiplets for the flavors. So I have those various complex parameters nu, and I keep track of them here. Yeah. Thanks. OK. The u are the one you integrate over, the dynamical field, and the nu are various mass, complex masses, and so on. Then the two-dimensional vacua, the vacuum equation are, what you expect in general, you take the critical point of the twisted superpotential. You have to be careful that the twisted superpotential are various as branch cut ambiguities. You can see explicitly in this formula for Lagrangian theories, the dialogue as a branch cut, where w goes to w plus integer times u plus another integer. But more generally, that is expected from this effective action because there is a flux here which is quantized, and you need to sum over all the topological sectors in two dimensions, all the fluxes on the Riemann surface. And so that's why you need to remove this ambiguity. So the actual critical point has this equal not zero, but an integer because of this ambiguity, taking derivative. So equivalently, you take the exponential of the first derivative of w equal one. And then the actual gauge group of the low energy field theory is not only the Cartan u1 to the rank, but it also times the Weyl symmetry, because we still have the Weyl symmetry acting on the u's parameters. So you still need to be careful about dividing by the Weyl symmetry. And doing that, the actual vacua are the one where when you have a u hat that solves this equation, but such that if you act with the Weyl group on u hat, so u hat is a the u, remember, are valued in the Cartan, so you can act on it with the Weyl symmetry, and you want that it's not acted on freely by any Weyl symmetry element. And then once you exclude those solutions, then the remaining one will be in complete orbits of the Weyl group, and then you divide by the Weyl group, and that will be your two-dimensional vacua. Those 2D vacua we call Bethe vacua, because this kind of problem was studied by Nekrasov-Chachashvili in the last 10 years or so. And they show that this kind of model in 2D or 2D model that comes from 3D or 4D are related to integrable system. And in that case, those vacuum equations are actually the Bethe equation for solving some integrable system. But for us, it's just a name. Those 2D vacua, to distinguish them from three-dimensional concept, those are called the Bethe vacua. Okay, moving on. So now we would like to compute observables in this auxiliary field theory in 2D. which you capture the full things about the 3D theory on let's say first on sigma g times s1. So what are the natural observables? So in any 2D n equal 2 to field theory, natural observables that are compatible with this A twist, so those supercharged Q minus and Q bar plus, are the twisted chiral observables. I mean, meaning correlation function of local operators, which are the OI twisted chiral. So those are the operators that commute with those two particular supercharges. Then you, that I will call L, I. And then you could consider any correlation function of such operators. And because in the cohomology of those two supercharges, it's really a topological field theory. It's a 2D TFT. It doesn't matter where I insert my lines here. And this two-dimensional topological field theory property will be important. And I could consider correlation function of any of those twisted chiral operators on sigma g. But now it's really a 3D field theory. So it's sigma g times s1. And then my local operator here are really lines in 3D, right? Because you have operator that commute with Q minus and Q bar plus. But of course, this condition, the twisted chiral condition in 2D is Lorentz covariant in 2D, but not in 3D. In 3D, you fix a line when you do that, which is the one around the circle. So there are operators in 3D that satisfy this condition, but they are line operators, which are up across the circle. So I can compute these things on any Riemann surface by using a trick where, so I insert my line and I insert an extra operator to the J and I consider the theory on S2 times S1. This is true in any topological field theory with or without, whether it comes or not from a supersymmetric model. This particular operator here, this local operator in 2D, is a so-called Handel-Gring operator. The basic reason is simple, is that because really we have a 2D topological field theory, if you have an handle here, I can shrink the handle all the way to a point, and then all the information about the handle should be in that point, in a local operator. And that this local operator can always be computed in terms of some basis of the Hilbert space of this 2D model. So we know it also for this theory that comes from 3D, with explicit formulas for Lagrangian theories. Then finally, a cool way to compute these things, instead of computing on S2 times S1, you could compute at genus 1. Because at genus 1, then we also know how to compute those correlation functions as a trace, right? You just, if I just compute now the same thing, L, H, G minus 1, sorry, G, Yes, A, G minus 1, but no, it's on T2. So on T2, you just sum over all, so you have a trace over the Hilbert space of the two-dimensional field theory. So we'll have a bunch of Hilbert space, but now it's a TFT, so the Hilbert space is finite dimensional, and it's in one-to-one correspondence with those two-dimensional vacua. Okay? So I will then index those states here in this time by the index those states in the Hilbert space by the solution to the Bethe vacua, to the Bethe equation, the Bethe vacua, those u hat. And so you can act with any operator on u hat. We will have explicit formula for these operators on the Coulomb branch. And then on the Coulomb branch, you just evaluate this operator that depends on the Coulomb branch parameters onto the solution. So we have some line. H to the G minus 1. And let me rewrite it. And this one. And so you get that finally the insertion of whatever lines on sigma G times S1 is equal to this trace over the Hilbert space, which is just a sum over the solution to the Bethe equation, u at solution to those Bethe equation over there. So those are completely explicit in terms of those guys for any Lagrangian theory. of this line operator valued that you need an explicit expression on the Coulomb branch, which we do, evaluated on the Bethe vacua. And there is also the end-algorithm operator evaluated on the Bethe vacua to the power g minus 1. So I won't give an explicit expression here for h. Maybe I can give some example here in the simplest case. One simple observable, of course, in those gauge series, for line operators are just the Wilson lines in gauge series, right? So one example for L will be if it's just a supersymmetric Wilson line that preserves precisely those two supercharges, which will be, let's say, my notation. So Wilson line corresponds to some choice of representation of the gauge group. You take a trace in the representation of e to the x of on S1 of the gauge field plus I beta sigma d psi, where psi will be some explicit coordinates here along the safest fiber, or in this case, just the S1. So that's my supersymmetric Wilson loop. And then when you evaluate those things onto the Coulomb branch, so this is just this complex parameters u. And so this Wilson line, of course, just becomes trace of r e to the 2 pi I u. So it's just the character of the representation for the Wilson line. Okay? And so in particular, I could compute expectation values of Wilson lines here. I just plug in the character, evaluate it, the u onto the Bethe equation, and I get explicit expression. Of course, you can also compare that to many new results. If you compare that to pure Chan-Simon theories, which it should relate in some cases, which should be equal to Chan-Simon theory up to some shift of the Chan-Simon levels, and then in that case, those reproduce well-known results like all the results about the Verlinde algebra and so on of a pure Chan-Simon theory. But in general, from this, let's say if you just consider Wilson lines, then you will have some generalization of the Verlinde algebra that depends on various flavor parameters instead of being just integers. You have a bunch of fugacities, and the coefficient of those are integers again, which would have this kind of Hilbert space interpretation. Okay, so now, finally, for the last 5 minutes, given all this technology, I can explain our formula for the Parchian function and also Wilson line on the same geometry for any Seifert manifold. What we're claiming, and we argue in the paper, is that for any Seifert manifold, the data of a Seifert manifold, there exists a particular line, which is like a defect line operator for the geometry, which you can insert, let's say, on S2 times S1. And so in that case, you just evaluate this particular defect line operators on the Bethe vacua, here F11 h minus 1. Okay. So I just need to tell you what is this defect line operator explicitly for a given Seifert vibration. So L M3, there is a term which is just the genus, that's just this end-algorithm operator. So the important piece is the piece that corresponds to the various Seifert fibers. So I have a product over all the Seifert fibers, and I introduce this GQP, QI, PI, U. So those are the so-called Seifert fibering operators on the Coulomb branch. And so we computed them in their various ways. They are all kind of probably not the most elegant, but there are various ways, and they satisfy many, many consensus conditions. And those are the explicit fibering operators for any Lagrangian theory. So let me walk you through that. So this nu is some flavor parameters. It's a flavor mass. The m here is also some background flux. In a generic manifold, you might turn on various fluxes or flat connection for the global symmetries as well. So you can keep track of them. So nu is my Coulomb branch parameters. Then, so if q and p are mutually prime, I have 1 over square root of q here. I have a sum over the fluxes in the GNO quantized fluxes for the gauge group. but modulo ZQ. So it's some ZQ reduction. It's like the co-character lattice divided by Q times the co-character lattice. So you sum over all these ZQ reduction of the fluxes. And then you have building blocks here inside in the summand. That's a classical piece from various Chern summand terms. It's given by this expression. There is a piece from the vector multiplet, which is given by the expression here, including some phase there. So it's all very explicit. And that, of course, we can compare this piece to pure Chern summand theories. And then there is the new piece, you might say, for the matter fields in terms of, again, the product of all the weights, all the chiral multiplets component, in terms of this function g phi of u. And g phi of u is just this completely explicit expression here in terms of exponential of a sum over from 0 to q minus 1 of some dialogue to a root of q's and so on. So that's completely explicit. You plug that into the expression there, and you get the solution for, of course, you can compare to non-results for S3B and so on, and those are explicit evaluation formula for those complicated integrals for the tree sphere. But it's also valid now for any Seifert manifold, the Poincaré homology sphere, or any other guys. As I said, we compare that to pure Chern summand. I guess I don't have time to explain the detail of that.
About 5 minutes.
OK. Maybe I can give just some small consistency checks of this. Two consistency checks. There is one very small one, but which is cute because, and that's not published, which is just to check this. As I said, this one you can compare to pure Chern summand, but this one is completely new. So you could compare this guy just for a free chiral, let's say. For a free chiral, I'm just telling you that the partial function on any Seifert manifold, you just take this product over all the Seifert fiber of this particular function. So you get the value of, so of course on the tree sphere, you would get a well-known value for a free chiral, let's say at a conformal chiral, conformally coupled chiral on S3, you would get, I don't remember, square root of 2 or something, square root of 2 over 2, or the log of that.
So in this case, you don't have any bad equation, you just
have this
function.
Well, yeah, for a free chiral, then there is just one vacuum, so there is no better equation. But you can couple it to a background vector multiplet. And there is a whole story about how you couple that R symmetries, which I suppressed in this discussion, but all those things depend also on choices of R symmetry. Whether or not, what choices are possible depends on the topology and so on. That's all, it will be almost a whole lecture on its own. But it's interesting that you can couple to, there are various refined things, including various signs here that depends also on, those results also depend on the choice of spin structure on the tree manifold, and you can keep track of that. And you can check across, well, there are many checks so that this is the correct result. So let's say for the chiral, one simple check is, let's say if you have a free chiral on the Poincaré homology sphere again, then what it should be, it should just be those fibering operator, this g of phi at 2 minus 1, 3, 1, 1, 4, 5, 1, 1, 4. Some extra term doesn't matter. But you remember that the Poincaré homology sphere are just three Seifert fibers with invariant 2 minus 1, 3, 1, and 5, 1. So you plug that. Here I choose the R charge, which is conformal, which is 1 half. Then there is a particular coupling to the R symmetry that I didn't explain. But then you need to evaluate those functions just at u equal 1 fourth. So you evaluate that. And in that case, you can compute, better compute f, which is minus the log of the partition function, and then you get minus 10297. And then you see, okay, just a free theory on any Seifert manifold, I should be able to compute it for free fermions, free bosons explicitly. I haven't done that, but it turns out that some people in Argentina, Azores and all, did that for some reason for this manifold and a few others in 2014. And they computed just by some explicit zeta function regularization of the Laplacians and so on this space. For a real scalar, they find -144, -144.35. And for a fermion, they find 18573. And so when you take two times that plus that, a complex scalar and a fermion, you find indeed the result that I found here for the supersymmetric Carrel multiplet. So that's one check, one small check, and you can do that for other topologies. A more interesting check, important check, another bunch of checks are of course supersymmetric dualities. You can do any kind of dualities, match them, and they match according, including all the phases and so on. And finally, for pure Chern-Simon theory, so you can start with G at level K n equal 2, but if and G is let's say simply connected, then it will flow in the IR integrating out the Gugino to pure Chern-Simon at level K at, which is K minus H, with the dual Coxeter number if K is positive. So then everything we said here should be equivalent to what is known explicitly in Chern-Simon theory up to this shift of the level, which is standard shift of the level. In that, indeed, the Bethe vacua in that case, so the Swiss superpotential is just Q U squared, so it's just the quadratic form here. Then the Bethe vacua are just the statement that U dual. So if you take U in the algebra and then take the dual, it will be a weight. When it's multiplied by K, it's a weight. So what? And then you need to still divide by the Weyl symmetry. But so the punchline is that the Bethe vacua in that case are just given by a choice of integrable representations with highest weight lambda. So that's the classical description of the Hilbert space of the Chern-Simon theory on T2. So of course, that's consistent. But then you can plug in the explicit formula in terms of those Bethe vacua, the integrable weight, which is then U equal lambda plus rho the Weyl vector divided by the supersymmetric K up to a dualization. And you plug it into those formulas, and you can compare to standard formula from surgery. So by a surgery argument, you would get something like, well, one way, there are many ways to compute this in Chern-Simon theory, but one way is to compute will be this formula. When you sum over all the highest weight, all the integrable representation of J at level K, and let me write it. And you sum over this bunch of matrices. So S is the modular matrix of the Chern-Simon theory or the corresponding Wiesemino-Witten model. So you get the S matrix at level L and 0. 0 is the trivial representation, lambda 0, to the power 2 minus 2j. And then there is a product over all the special fiber, where U is the SL2Z matrix acting on the Hilbert space of the Chern-Simon theory that corresponds precisely to my matrix that I use for surgery here. And so comparing to our formula, we see that S lambda 0 minus 2 should be equal to the Handel-Guenck operator evaluated on this Bethe vacua. And similarly, U lambda 0 over S lambda 0 should be equal to this expression here in the absence of matter fields. So you can check that. There are explicit formulas for this that dates from Jeffrey and from Marino and so on. This is known explicitly, and that matches explicitly to these things. And so we were very happy when we found that. So we think that's the correct formula on the Nice-Effert manifolds. And I will conclude here.
Questions for Cyril? If not, then let's think through it.